The next matter the court's going to take up is the Ramos-Fantuzzi versus Matos matter. Mr. Deal? Mr. Williams? All right, Mr. Williams, come on up, please. How much time would you like to reserve?
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
Okay.
Please, the court. Anthony Williams, represent Mr. Ramos-Fantuzzi. The Puerto Rico court divorced the parties in 2006 and performed one act of equitable distribution, that is awarding the appellee the Mercury Sable car. There is no reservation of jurisdiction for bifurcation of the proceedings in that final decree. And as the court knows, there was an amended decree that essentially incorporated everything from the original decree except for the stipulations of the parties pertaining to the military benefits. There was a partial decree, and that happened in 2006. There was a partial decree in 2007, or partial verdict, and we have no authority on the record for as to how that happened or why. The court simply made it seem like they did it, therefore it's okay, and there wasn't an appeal, so here we are. Neither in the final decree nor in the partial verdict was there an award of military pension retirement. There was mention of military benefits, but no specific, and they weren't awarded because they weren't incorporated.
Counsel, let me ask you to address one of the arguments advanced by the appellee, which is the res judicata argument, that essentially that the equitable distribution should have occurred and could have occurred in Puerto Rico.
I agree. It should have occurred. It did actually occur. As I said, the final decree awarded a Mercury Sable as part of the equitable distribution. Now, the reason that, well, it's clear as to why the Puerto Rico court would not have awarded the military pension, and that's because Puerto Rico treats the military pension as separate property. It is not community property. It's not marital property.
Right, but that wouldn't necessarily, it would just impact as separate property as opposed to property that could actually be distributed between the parties. And I think the issue about the res judicata is essentially, if that's the venue you're bringing it, would you be stuck and should have brought it there when you could have and had the opportunity?
Well, and it's interesting because on the petition that the parties filed, which references the DeLuca Roman versus Colon Nieves case that establishes that at a separate property, the appellee actually lists a Virginia address. So if we're talking about what she could have done to ensure that she would have been perhaps entitled to some equitable distribution as to the military pension, she possibly could have filed in Virginia. Didn't. So because equitable distribution was conducted in Puerto Rico, that is res judicata, that there is nothing left for the Virginia court to equitably distribute, which kind of brings us to the next phase of, well, how did we get here? Well, we get to the registration and enforcement of either or both of those orders, the final decree or the partial verdict, which essentially purported to transfer jurisdiction on that issue to the Virginia court. Forum non-convenient, I understand that. Even though the internet works just as well down there and the mail probably works better than around here. So the enforcement of these two orders, well, what is there to enforce? Nothing. The court, the appellee, agreed, conceded several times that there was no award of military pension in either the final decree or the partial verdict. So, what is there to enforce? And the trial court said, well, we're enforcing the transfer of jurisdiction. Well, okay. They also, the court said, well, we're not using the laws of Puerto Rico, because I tried that in my first hearing to try and use the DeLuca Roman case. And it's like, no, we're using Virginia law. Okay, so we have two orders that award nothing pertaining to the military pension. So then how do we get from there, where these orders are registered, to the trial court dividing appellant's military pension without even a analysis pursuant to 21073 of the factors of to why the appellee might be entitled to a portion of the military retirement?
Well, admittedly, though, under 21.07, it would be time-barred, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
So the only avenue, essentially, in terms of having anything before the court would be 801-465 in terms of docketing what would be purportedly an award or an order.
Yes, Your Honor, to enforce the order. But again, there is nothing to enforce pertaining to the equitable distribution. There's no authority cited. And I asked the trial court, okay, under what law are you awarding a portion of the military pension? And she said, the Uniform Former Spouses Protection Act, Title 10, 1408. And I highlight to Her Honor that that does not provide any rights to the party. It simply relegates the matter of whether or not military pension is separate or marital property to the individual states. And that's pretty much where it was left. It's like, well, we're going to give her half of the marital share of his military pension without a statute authorizing it. So there's a big gap, there's a big void of law between registering the orders and the military pension division order. It's significant that the original draft of the military pension division order cited that it was being entered or presented pursuant to 20-107.3. During the trial, counsel for the appellee asked the court to strike out 20-107.3 if she saw fit and insert whatever law pertains to division of property. There's no law cited in the military pension division order other than 801, 8.01, 465, 1, 2, and Title 10 U.S. Code 1408. No Virginia statute authorizing the division of that pension. No theory. Was it contract? Was it quantum enrichment? How do we arrive at division of the military pension? And again, that is the big question. It was done without, well, it wasn't done with due process, I say now, but it's simply a leap from the registration to the division. So because it was not divided pursuant to any legitimate or expressed Virginia statute, the court erred, and the order should be overturned and attorney's fees should be awarded. I asked numerous times, what law is it? The judge said numerous times that there was no award. We're not applying Puerto Rico law. We're applying Virginia law. No reservation of jurisdiction to bifurcate the proceedings by Virginia law. I mean, we had a final decree. It's time barred. No reservation of jurisdiction. 21 days to modify an order. Didn't happen. So again, I come to you with a big question. How did they do this? How did the trial court do this? I don't know. And perhaps I'll address it in rebuttal if counsel for appellee can explain to the court under what statute this military pension, because it is, while it was presented in the guise of a registration and enforcement of a foreign decree, it is a equitable distribution of a military pension, which is provided for in 20.107.3a for a foreign decree if they comply with the provisions of subparagraph J, which again are very specific and brings us back to the fact that they are time barred. The last order from Puerto Rico was 2012. They had 2 years to, if there was something awarded, to come to the Virginia court to ask for enforcement. The mere transfer of jurisdiction does not say that the Virginia court can now do whatever they want.
Can you transfer the jurisdiction on something that's not a final order if it's not under the, if it's proceeding under 801-465? What's your position on that?
It has to be a final order. That's my position. It's interesting because the partial verdict says, well, we're transferring that one issue to Virginia, but we're withholding, it mentions real property, debts, and obligations of the parties to be dealt with some other time, which I am not aware of any other proceedings. So it could very well be a non-final order that has not been subject to appeal yet. Don't know. They conceded, or their position was it was a final order, and the trial court said it was a final order. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Deal?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Lawrence Steele. I'm representing the appellee. Let me start out with a basic principle that courts should give deference to the court's interpretation of their own orders.
Well, let me stop you and ask you a jurisdictional question because I think that might be
sure.
Something we need to address initially out of the box. Under 801-465, that's usually the docketing of a foreign judgment, correct? It's any
not just a judgment. If it's a money judgment, it's under 465.6, which is the foreign money
right.
judgment. And it says judgment, order, or decree.
Right.
And they have not cited a single case that says that they can't transfer something that's been unadjudicated under that order.
What authority do you have that indicates that it can be, though?
Excuse me?
Can you point to any authority that says it's something that hasn't
been
unadjudicated?
The only thing I could find...
Hang on. Let me
okay.
You may know what I'm going to ask, but let me just finish the question. Can you point to any authority that indicates that if an award has not been given, that under 801-465, that a Virginia court, after it's been docketed here, can in fact do any type of enforcement?
There's no case on point that I know of. The Attorney General's opinion that we cited said that it doesn't have to be a money judgment, and an order is an order, even if it's not a final order. If they wanted to say final orders, they could, so we shouldn't rewrite it. Plus, we have a policy of how do we enforce the 10 U.S.C. 1408 rights to the state to do something if we can't get a mechanism to get it to the state. The two-year statute of limitations doesn't apply. That's subsection J. That's a specific jurisdictional issue for those where there's, let's say, an Idaho divorce, a resident of Virginia, no jurisdiction over that individual. Then once he's notified, that person then can pursue equitable distribution that hadn't been pursued. It has nothing to do with the jurisdiction. So when you say, well, the 2 years has passed, that's a whole different vehicle. The use of the 465.1 is the proper vehicle for enforcing, and Puerto Rico itself, and that's why I was going to say, the partial verdict. In that verdict, they basically said they acknowledge and they should be given deference to their interpretation that it was not a final claim, and that they wanted to, like a non-formed convenience, pass to Virginia because of all the factors. Clearly, they intended it to be the retirement because they're talking about 50%. They're talking about the
but
reasons.
Does that present an issue when it's not a final claim that now is being docketed?
No, what was the order that was docketed was the order of the transfer by Puerto Rico. And there's nothing that says that you can't do that.
But in the final order from Puerto Rico, it indicates that she has the right to the claim in reference to the military benefits, but there's not the award for the benefits.
And that's why they deferred. That's exactly what states do in other states. Sometimes you'll defer and transfer these issues. Otherwise, there'd be no vehicle to do it. I disagree that there was any final order on ED. I disagree that this 21 days, that's Virginia law. We don't know what Puerto Rico law is. It's obvious that they said this was a timely filed petition. They said we can defer property later, which apparently, and there's many pages referencing the argument 106, 147, 214, 220, where they talk about in the arguments that Puerto Rico bifurcates different maybe from Virginia. We have good care standards and other things. So there was not a single site that said that they couldn't do it, and they never appealed that order anyway. So that's the law of the case, that they ordered the transfer under 465.1 that says any judgment, decree, or order. That's an order. So why should we restrict as a policy matter when the policy should be to promote the adjudication of a final issue that had not been adjudicated?
Because isn't it a jurisdictional issue? Because in Virginia, we receive jurisdiction in terms of the courts, either through the Constitution or statute. And in terms of 465, where does it actually confer jurisdiction to further proceed in terms of such as an equitable distribution?
By the registration of the Puerto Rican order that says we are deferring to Virginia, we register it. Now it's a Virginia order. And what is the order? The order is we need to have Virginia adjudicate the issue of the retirement benefits.
Mr. Keough, what if the order that is being registered to be enforced is not valid?
Well, that would be speculation because
it seems valid. Same question as my colleague does here. Under what authority can a foreign court confer jurisdiction on another court, which is what you are essentially arguing, that by order in the Puerto Rican court, the jurisdiction to make a decision based on an equitable distribution matter is conferred, has been transferred. I don't understand how that can be done.
I think we have to assume the validity, though, of a Puerto Rican order. There's no authority that they've cited that says that that's an invalid process, and Puerto Rico basically said, for these reasons, we don't want to have jurisdiction. Virginia could decline it.
The issue on this question, I think, probably resides under Virginia law, and in respect to how does a court acquire jurisdiction over any matter here. I don't believe that the state, the Commonwealth, permits under any rule that some foreign entity, state or otherwise, can be the authority that defines our jurisdiction.
Well, you know, we have analogies under UCCJ.
In the UCCJC, that is stated.
I'm saying that.
And has agreed.
I'm saying that.
Signed on to it. But we didn't sign on to anything of this sort. I don't know the answer to it, but I cannot answer the question. How did the court acquire jurisdiction by virtue of some other authority unrelated to our state saying, Virginia, you've got it?
Again, I would go back to the fact that under the Uniform Service Act, it defers it to the state, okay? So we start there. And once
I'm not quarreling with the military.
All right. But Puerto Rico basically said, because of all of the requests that they sent it to Virginia, I still think that the word order should be broadly construed to mean exactly what we have here to effectuate it. Otherwise, we've got a remedy and a right without ability to adjudicate.
I'm not going to answer yes again, but I just think the fundamental question is, what if the order is not valid? Does it still operate in the way that you've been arguing in this case?
Well, first
or
of all,
putting another way, I assume the order has to be valid, that what it purports to do is valid.
I would argue no one raised that issue on appeal, and it's not before the court. Secondly, they never said the 801 vehicle is not the vehicle. They were arguing that it's not a final order for the vehicle to be enforced. So you have to limit, I would argue, your ruling on what has been raised as the appeal. And they've never said we don't have jurisdiction in that sense. It's just that it's not a final order.
It's inherent in the argument that the claimant is making.
All right. Well,
that jurisdiction was not properly effectuated, if you will. I don't know about transfer.
Well, I would just argue that the plain language of 801.465.1 says judgment, decree, or order. And it doesn't say final order, final judgment. And in order to promote the ability of this court to do something in Virginia is certainly consistent with what Puerto Rico wanted, with the federal act. Otherwise, we've got kind of a cloud out here with a remedy that she'll never be able to get because no one wants to try it. But that still doesn't answer your question. I understand it's jurisdictional. But I would not, there's no case on point anywhere that I have found. I got that. But you have to look at the language of the words of the statute and to promote the policy. And the policy ought to be to promote orders that need to be adjudicated. And that's what happened here. They register the order of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico apparently has the authority to bifurcate. They say there's no bifurcation, apparently, to bifurcate years later. Not our law. I got that. But it's still clearly what they intended. So by saying we're going to grant their motion to transfer it, I don't know of any law either way other than the rights under the act that should be promoted under the term order. And then we have the only authority is the Attorney General Office that says it doesn't have to be a money judgment. Anything else can be adjudicated, and then it's up to the court and the clerk. it's not just throwing out something and some state throwing it over here.
But
I
again,
mean,
by analogy, if the UCCJA did not specifically permit a transfer of jurisdiction to another state on those matters, I don't believe that that could ever occur. That's why they have to be signatories to that act.
And I understand that.
And I think there's some parallel there that I can't grasp yet, but maybe that's one way to look at it.
Well, then the answer would be, what's the remedy for Mrs. Santa?
The argument is the statute does that for you.
Exactly. It has to, because otherwise you'd be able to have a remedy without any right to get it effectuated. And that wouldn't be fair.
But
your honors, I think, can interpret in a manner that promotes all of the sequence of how these all relate. And there's nothing that says you can't do that, because there's no restrictive statute about ED transfers or jurisdiction. There are cases, I can tell you as a practical matter, where you have two different divorces in different states, and one's going to, you know, kind of stay their action while another state's working on it, and then they transfer it later. And let's assume this.
Gale, aren't those cases generally that you're referring to where their subject matter issues directly before those courts, which is not exactly what would be what we have here, analogous to what we have here?
Well, Puerto Rico had transferred the jurisdiction here. We certainly had jurisdiction once it's here.
But you just gave an example of where there are two matters before two courts that clearly have subject matter jurisdiction, or one will stay.
Well, check page 132 of the argument. There was a question by Judge Willis. If we transfer it, what law applies? How do we have subject matter jurisdiction? This is Mr. Williams' quote. Okay, and so if we were to apply Virginia law, I would state that 2107.3 would be the most applicable. Obviously, we have subject matter jurisdictions once it's transferred. I guess the whole thing is that the vehicle to transfer it, and if not, how else? And no one's in Puerto Rico anymore. Puerto Rico didn't want to have anything to do with it because of the factors they looked at, including discovery. They were talking about
clearly under 20-107, it could have been transferred within a certain time frame for this court to determine.
The 2 years doesn't apply. You keep saying that.
No, I'm just saying under that statutory scheme. I'm not talking about a time frame. I'm saying under that statutory scheme, wouldn't you agree that it could have been transferred for the equitable distribution to occur? The transfer
Puerto Rico?
Yes. The transfer could have occurred under that statutory scheme. That's all I'm asking. I'm not asking about a statutory scheme.
The only transfer or jurisdictional to get the application of 107.3 is J. And that's the only one that talks about how you get into the statute when there's a foreign decree, and there's nothing that addresses what we have here. There's nothing in 2107.3 that says we'll accept something else. I mean, it might be comity, that theory, or something like that. So the only vehicle would be to register the order, which was the vehicle that was used here. I'm not sure there's any other technical ways to get it. But once it's here, then I think the subject matter jurisdiction then would. And even the Puerto Rican order, and one of the factors they looked at was to say, we recognize that there may be a different application of law, but we don't think that's prejudicial to Mr. Santos. And so they actually addressed that, I think it's page 13 or 14, something in that partial verdict, when they looked at all those factors. So they're anticipating Virginia law to apply. It was conceded by Mr. Williams that 107.3 would be the applicable jurisdictional basis. I mean, the subject matter jurisdiction, once we get it, because it's sent up to us to do. And then where do you do it? You do it under that statute, because the federal statute says apply state law.
That was my question, that under 107.3, that would be a way that the court...
Absolutely.
That simply was my question.
Okay, well, I would agree that that would be the applicable law that has to be applied state by state. In Virginia, it's that statute, based on the federal statute that says you apply state law. I guess it all comes down to what is the scope of 465.1. I think that's your concern, and I would argue that you're rewriting it by putting limits on it, by saying it doesn't mean what it says when it says an order. It doesn't say a permanent order, temporary order. And if you look at the policy of what would be promoted by allowing this to be done, it's going to basically effectuate the protection of this rights. Otherwise, she's got all the rights in the world, but she'll never get them. That's not fair. That's an absurd result in a restrictive interpretation of the statute. We should be promoting interpretations of statute that kind of fall in an overall scheme that allows this court to do something. So if Puerto Rico said, Virginia, do it, and they have an order that says it's not final and sent up here, I don't see why that can't be. It's a final order as to the transfer. I mean, it is final. They said it's being transferred. So you could look at it that way. And then Virginia has jurisdiction. But I would hate to say, well, we're just not going to do it for no reason when we have policy, we have the words, and I don't know of a single case on point anywhere on either side of it other than the Attorney General as somewhat of a guidance. And I wish I could give you more authority, because if there was out there, I'd find it. But
I guess I'll just leave it there. Could the Puerto Rican court order that a decision in equitable distribution and transfer?
Yes.
Could it have
then it's an enforcement of something different from deciding something. Same thing. I think they could. And then you're enforcing something, and that's their argument. But
you could simply say, Virginia court, decide this equitable distribution issue.
Yeah, because the reason they're arguing that there was no authority to do it in Puerto Rico, had there not been a stipulation, we wouldn't be here. Because then they would have not been able to do it at that point. Although res judicata, if they didn't rule on it, it still then might be raised in some other context. And I'm not sure how that would be done. I just think the statute is the perfect vehicle, the only vehicle. And otherwise, we're going to have a right without a remedy. And that just is not good legislative interpretation.
Thank you, Mr. Dean.
Thank you.
Mr. Williams?
I didn't hear the answer. Ms. Santa Matos had rights and remedies. She had the right to proceed in the Puerto Rico court to its full extent and exercise and be subject to every law set forth in Puerto Rico pertaining to equitable distribution and any other aspect of the marriage. She could have, and she should have. It's obvious why she did not, for that one reason, for that one item of the military pension, because she would not have succeeded in Puerto Rico. There is no right or remedy to bifurcate equitable distribution across jurisdictions. There's nothing in the Virginia statutes allowing an order, and the court hit on it, supposedly transferring jurisdiction, for Virginia to just say, okay, statutes aside, we now have jurisdiction to take his military pension and do whatever it is we want without relying on any of the Virginia statutes, such as the factors pertaining to equitable distribution and why she should be or could be entitled to any portion of his military pension. It is a pretzel logic argument to say they did it, therefore we can do it. Again, there is no theory that I've heard, no case law, to establish that what the trial court did was legally proper, or even logically proper for that matter. The Puerto Rico court could have ruled on all matters of equitable distribution, and my first position was that they did in their final decree. There was a Mercury Sable that was awarded. That's equitable distribution. No reservation of jurisdiction. Virginia law would say they have to reserve the jurisdiction to bifurcate and act on some other aspect of the case, equitable distribution later. It would have to be specified in the order. Something that we haven't talked about, even though jurisdiction is the big issue, one item is the stipulations, which were not incorporated into the final decree. They were in the petition in which they cite the DeLuca-Roman case. They were mentioned in the partial decree, but in those stipulations, it's very specific about what Mr. Ramos stipulated to. Military benefits, including PX, BX, medical, 2020, which is not something that's listed in 10 U.S.C. 1408, that's referring to the medical benefits a spouse can be entitled to TRICARE if they've been married for 20 years, overlapping with 20 years of service. It's not a right in and of itself, 2020, it's not called that. But nowhere in there was listed military pension. And I think it's important to note the letter from DFAS from 2010 rejecting her attempt to get a portion of that, because the DFAS, Department of Finance Administrative Services, states that the order would have had to specifically say military pension. Also in, well, and it did not. And again, I don't think DFAS is binding on this court as far as the interpretation, but it is significant and should be persuasive. So, because she was things that were stipulated to that did not include the military pension, only those things should be even considered if jurisdiction had been established and were kind of a few steps down the way. He did stipulate to the survivor benefit plan, as you can probably see somewhere on the record, that he's been paying that, paying the premiums on that ever since. And if he were to pass, God forbid, before she would, then she would be entitled to some portion, 55% of his military pension. But nowhere in the stipulation, and there's no, it's clear. I think it's clear on its face. If not, there could have been a parole evidence hearing. And during that hearing, Mr. Ramos would have certainly explained that DeLuca Roman is clear. It's cited in the stipulations. Because it was cited, because Puerto Rico law does not provide for a division of the military pension, I did not stipulate to her receiving any portion thereof. Thank you. Any questions?
Court will calm down and greet counsel.